Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Coffee, red wine, dark chocolate, all substances that have been touted as containing anti-aging compounds. The science is still out on their age-defying effectiveness, but there is a proven path to help people stay as physically and mentally active as possible for as long as possible. Dr. Stephen Schimpf is an internist and former chief executive officer of the University of Maryland Medical Center. He is a professor at the University of Maryland School of Medicine and the author of several books. His latest is Longevity Decoded, The Seven Keys to Healthy Aging. Welcome to the show, Dr. Schimpf.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
When do people start to notice the impact of aging?
Well, we all have a little bit of denial in this, I suppose, but we really start to age when we're young adults. So when do we notice it? I know for myself, I started noticing it when I was maybe in my late 60s. I like to chop wood or split wood, and I can still do it. I could still do it then, but I couldn't do it for as long.
So aging actually starts in early adulthood.
Probably in the 20s, certainly by the 40s. You can do some biological measurements. It turns out that just about all of our body systems start a decline. It's only about 1% a year, and you don't notice that. What's 1%? And we have lots of redundancy in all our organs. But it starts. And you think of things like, oh, say, bone mineral density. Well, 1% loss of that doesn't mean much when you're 30 or 40 or even 50. But then a point in time comes and the doctor says...
Because it's cumulative, yeah.
And so now you're, let's say, 60 years old, and the doctor says, you know, maybe we should get a bone scan, see how strong your bones are. And you're surprised to find out that, gee, my bones aren't what they were.
Your seven keys to healthy aging, the subtitle of your book, mm-hmm. include advice we hear often. Exercise daily, get a good night's sleep, eat a nutritious diet, and don't smoke. But I want to ask you about the other three keys: reducing stress, staying socially and intellectually engaged. How does stress affect the aging process?
I think stress is really underappreciated as a disease causer and as an age accelerator, if you will. You know, if you go outside the studio here and onto the street, and if you see a big beer truck barreling down the road at you, you're going to run off the street. And when you get off the street, you're going to realize that your heart's beating fast, you're breathing deep, your eyes are wide, all the muscles are tense, and that's our life-saving ability when confronted with that type of acute stress. And then it dies off after a little while. Within 5 minutes, you feel sort of calm and everything's okay. Chronic stress is the same thing, but it's at a very low level. And during chronic stress, which might be from a job you can't stand or some family issues or whatever they might be, you have a continual but low-level output of chemicals, same ones that you have with acute stress. So it's adrenaline, it's cortisone, which actually create inflammation. And the inflammation occurs within the body in whatever organ in you is most susceptible. Might be your coronary arteries, might be your brain, might be your joints. But this chronic, steady, slow output of these chemicals is causing this inflammation, and that in turn is accelerating the aging process and setting any of us up, for a significant disease later.
Social engagement, remaining intellectually stimulated, what benefits does this provide as we age?
So just to go back, you mentioned a number of things: not smoking, reducing stress, getting sleep, eating well, exercising. Our bodies need that. But our brain needs that too, but it also needs to be challenged. The brain is like an organ. It's like your muscles. Your muscles need exercise. Well, the brain needs exercise. So we need challenges. So what's a challenge? A challenge is doing something that I use the same term, but challenges your mind, challenges your brain. So reading a book probably isn't a challenge. Going to movies isn't a challenge. But if you were in a book club and you had to sit there and kind of defend your point of view about the book, well, that's a challenge. Or playing a game of skill, that's a challenge. Learning a new musical instrument or learning a new dance step, those are all intellectual challenges.
And so it's something about learning something new as opposed to doing something you already can do, even if that is somewhat an intellectual pursuit.
Mm-hmm. So it's keeping the system working. And what happens during that is we're continually then laying. We always think of the brain as kind of like a computer. It's you know, it was made and it's not going to change. It's not true though. It is constantly changing. The more we use it, the more we're laying down new neurologic pathways. They're called synapses, and that laying down is continually building our brain up. So that even as an older person, you can keep building it up.
Although I assume the brain is also susceptible to that 1% a year decline.
Yes, it is, very much. So all the more reason why you want to keep at it. And by the way, another important point is you like to start off adulthood at the highest point possible, the strongest bone possible, the strongest brain, if you will. And that means that during childhood and adolescence, you want to drink your milk, get out and exercise. Don't sit in front of the TV and play on your cell phone. Because bones, for example, they get strengthened by what we eat and how we exercise. Bones really respond to just a walk. But you got to get up and do it. You can't sit in your chair.
And they build a lot.
And they build a lot.
As you're young.
Yeah. So if
that you can't catch up on.
So if you could start out at X plus 10... that's a lot better than starting out at X.
So we talked about the intellectual stimulation. Why is social engagement important?
I don't think it's terribly well understood, but it's clear that it is. We as humans need interactions with other people. If we can't be hermits, we've got to interact. And there's many areas in the world where these people have been studied, and you find that if there's this social engagement, people tend to live longer and they have a more positive outlook on life. Take people away from that loneliness. Loneliness is probably as bad for a person as smoking.
Why?
Chemicals get released, and again, it's not terribly well understood, but chemically it's not understood, biologically it's not understood, but it's known that it's very well known that if you don't interact with other people, if you can be lonely in a crowd. I'll give you an example. Think of kids that are going to play ball, and so they're going to choose up teams, and so two people get chosen as the captains. They start choosing for their team members. Well, you are the last one chosen. You know you really weren't wanted. And so, even though you're in a group, you're lonely because you know that you're really not considered good at playing ball. That has a chemical impact on our bodies.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with internist and professor of clinical medicine, Dr. Stephen Schimpf. We're talking about his latest book, Longevity Decoded, which offers a plan for healthier and happier aging. You started to touch on this. You write about blue zones, regions across the globe with the highest prevalence of adults aged 100 years or older. One of them is Icarus, an island of Greece in Loma Linda, California, home to a community of Seventh-day Adventists. On the whole, what do these communities have in common?
Well, what don't they have in common? They're different ethnic backgrounds, different genetic backgrounds, different religions, obviously different locations in the world. But what they do have is a way of life. It's a way of life which is not our way of life. It's a way of life that says, I'm going to walk all day. I'm going to eat a pretty much a locally sourced diet without much processed foods. Fast food restaurants, they may exist, but there are not many of them. They usually eat their meals together as a family. We don't seem to do that so much anymore. Some of them smoke, but most of them don't. Some of them drink, but they don't drink much. But one of the really key things, gets back to our social engagement discussion, is that they're very closely knit within their family and within their community. They sort of stand up for each other, if you will. They interact well, and older people are valued. They're not sort of shoved aside. Their wisdom is accepted. They're part of the group, and they're looked upon with some awe, if you will.
So of all of those aspects, how can you tease out what is most important, or is it even necessary? Most of us cannot envision emulating the entire lifestyle you just described.
No, because we don't live on the island of Sardinia, or we don't live in Okinawa or the peninsula in Costa Rica, but we can do a lot of it. We can think about what we eat. Sure, we can have red meat, but we should have, I know this sounds, you know, trite, but we should have our vegetables and multicolors, and we should have some fruit every day. And we don't have to eat as much sugar as we do. You know, the average American eats 154 pounds of sugar a year.
Oh, my gosh.
And you think about that. It's 5-pound bags of sugar. That's 30 bags of sugar on this table. And since there's two of us, we'd have to have 60 bags of sugar. And since you don't eat that much sugar and I don't eat that much sugar.
Actually, I do.
Well, then, okay. But I'm going to say I don't. Most people say I don't. then we have to have, somebody else must be eating more than we are.
That is a sobering thought. Are younger generations in these blue zones continuing these healthy behaviors?
Yes and no. I mean, modern life is coming to places. My daughter's been to Okinawa, for example, and she says that, you know, it's changing. There's a lot more fast foods. There's a lot more processed foods. People drive to work now. They don't walk. They have to go a distance. So, yeah, it's changing.
There is no silver bullet, but there are different vitamins and treatments that claim to be anti-aging. Is it worth trying out those supplements?
Well, you just used the word supplements. So what I'm going to say is a supplement should be a supplement. It shouldn't be what you want. You know, all of us want to go to the doctor and say, hey, have you got a pill for me? But what we really have to do is change our lifestyles. We have to eat a good diet. We have to get up and exercise. We need to deal with our stress. We need a good night's sleep. Most Americans do not get an adequate amount of sleep each night. We shouldn't smoke, of course, and the intellectual challenges, social engagement we just talked about. Okay, if we really do all that or come reasonably close, then we can think about a supplement.
When should people start following these recommendations?
My advice is start young. 20s, 30s, but we don't think about it then. We're not worried about getting older then. That's the last thing on our minds. But that's when we should start, because it's like we advise people, or we're all advised when we're young, start saving that. Put your money in an IRA because it'll compound, and by the time you retire, you'll have more. Don't try and, you know, put it all in the last few years. It's the same thing here. Following this prescription that I've just laid out, if you will, it's not just me. I mean, we've all read this before. But if you really follow it, it'll work. It'll compound. And you're going to end up reducing the chance for developing a significant chronic illness, and you're going to live longer, but you're going to live healthier.
Well, you've given us a lot to think about. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Dr. Stephen Schimpf is an internist, a professor of clinical medicine at the University of Maryland School of Medicine, and former chief executive officer of the University of Maryland Medical Center. His latest book is Longevity Decoded, The 7 Keys to Healthy Aging. Quick break now on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. When we come back, a Stoop story about the strength it takes to heal.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.